Welcome to Bell Folks Stuff, an experimental podcast where I talk to interesting folks about really important stuff that they enjoy doing. Let's get started.
Hey folks, it has been a very long time since I have recorded one of these here things. Several years? This for anybody who is just now listening to this and has not listened to any of the previous episodes, Bell Folks Stuff is kind of a side project of mine where I convince some of my friends to sit down and have a conversation, and I use a structured battery of questions to kind of direct that conversation. But hopefully more natural flow of the conversation happens than not. And this one is going to be very interesting because every time I record one of these, I share more personal details of my life. And this is probably just about as personal as it's gonna get, because this is someone that I went to school with and was very close with. And for years, I have just referred to them as the enigmatic title, the librarian. And it's part of that's because on my blog, I've always tried to protect people who aren't actually like actively involved in issues. So today I am going to be talking to my friend, who honestly like has mostly gone by the handle Kalian the entire time I've known them. So welcome aboard.
Well, thank you. So as I take another sip of drink.
So like, first, I feel like we have to get a disclaimer out of the way. Last night there was a tornado that passed within about a mile of each of our houses, kind of split the difference between where we live. So neither one of us slept terribly well. And as a result, you're going to get what you're going to get. But we had made plans to do this thing after talking about it for a while.
God can't stop us.
Exactly. Like, that tornado cannot stop us. And there's a great picture of Kalian out in their front yard watching for the tornado. Because, like, that's basically what we do here in Oklahoma. The hilarious thing is like, so I had a medical thing yesterday, and my dad drove me because I didn't know how invasive it was going to be, because like, it was in theory a special kind of thing. And some of these things have been invasive. And I didn't know if I'd be good to drive afterwards. So my dad took me, and we pulled into the neighborhood right as the tornado siren was blowing. And I ran in and looked at the news real quick to find out where it was, to determine whether or not it was safe for him to go home. Because, like, the thing you have to understand is here in Oklahoma, tornado sirens blow well ahead of the tornado actually being here usually. And it's kind of just a heads up of like, hey,
here's maybe the time you to should go outside and watch it.
Yeah. Maybe you should be weather aware. And about that time, I got like, it wasn't just a text. Like, I had my phone on silent, and it came through and made the National Weather Service sound on my phone and read out the text. It was a wild night last night.
And it stopped and started well until I think 5 o'clock this morning was the last time I heard any kind of activity outside.
I had gone to bed around 10 and conked out pretty quickly because it was a busy day. And then a wave came through at 3:30 and woke up me, and the cats were freaking out. And
the sirens went off at like 3:30.
That may have
nothing
been
on the news. Yeah. Nothing going on. Sirens here, at least in North Owosso, was just going off all the time, and we couldn't figure out why they were going off. Sarah was in bed already, and I was like, well, I don't see anything, so I'm just going to go back to painting.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, and at the end, like about 10, they went off again, and there was nothing on the radar. So the first of many questions is how we know each other, and this one is weirdly straightforward because we've talked about this a lot. like how we initially met. So, okay. So you have to understand there's, I think, 2 years between us roughly.
Mm-hmm.
Cause you were a freshman when I was a junior, correct?
Yes. And I've been trying to rack my head the last couple of days because my ADHD brain does not do like first memories well at all.
Oh, I know exactly where we met the first time.
Okay, because I was like, was it in freshman year? Was it the second half of freshman year?
Well, the hell before that.
Well, okay. Yeah.
Via a mutual friend's birthday party. This is the first time I ever met you.
Well, yeah, with a gun pointing in your face as you charged out of a bush, but you know.
No, like, I mean, yeah, no, like that was when I first met you. I am pretty sure we started hanging out via something to do with the Gifted and Talented program.
I think you're right. I think it was the academic team was probably when we first kind of met officially, because before that I just knew you as this person. I didn't even realize you were at the aforementioned birthday party when me and a friend of mine decided to crash it when we were very small. But as far as meeting each other, I think it was probably academic team. It must have been something to do with that.
Yep. And the problem is like, so you have to understand, we graduated, like my graduating class was 60. So it's impossible to not know of someone in the small town we grew up in. But yeah, like actually really knowing each other well, yeah, it would have been through academic team. And for lack of a, like, as shorthand, if you've watched Stranger Things, I was the Eddie character and Kaylian was what's the other kid's name? I'm drawing a blank now. Yeah, but basically there was about that amount of difference between the two of us, and we both realized we liked comics, and we both realized we liked pen and paper.
Computers,
yeah.
Wolfenstein.
3D. Yeah, so like my mom was a home ec teacher and had like this tiny little computer lab in the back of her classroom. And I don't know what sequence of events led to us all hanging out there and eating lunch, but we basically like one of the earliest memories I have is all of us like making Wolfenstein levels and playing through them together. Mm-hmm. Like Wade would make one, or I would make one, or you would make one, and then we'd all try and beat it.
Mm-hmm.
And put as much stupid stuff in it as possible.
So I remember having like actual lunch in your mom's classroom first. And okay. I think that's like naturally where you were having lunch because she was your mom.
Yeah. And I would just store lunch in the fridge.
Yeah. And you would like invite a few select people to join you once in a while. And I got the honor of being one of those at some point. And I think eventually we got, probably knowing us, we were too loud and we were too excited about something. And your mom kind of mentioned, you know, there's computers back there in that little room with a door on it. And I think that's probably why we migrated. And then we got in there and it was all over. It was Windows, 3.1?
Yeah, it was Windows 3.1.
When that first like started. So we were like,
it was an early 486. And... yeah, it was an early 486. Yeah. I set the lab up for her, which also meant that, you know, like I knew what could run on them. So... mm-hmm. But they were better computers than my computer at home, because like I had a 386/16. You had a 486 of some sort. It was like an IBM.
Around that time, yeah. It was. In fact, I just looked it up the other day. I was trying to figure out what it was, and I know it was sold at, oh my God, not Sears. It was the Montgomery Ward.
Mm. Yeah, ours came from Sears.
$3,000.
Ours is probably something like that, because I remember we bought it in 91, and it was like the hotness, and it had 2 megs of RAM.
Yeah, I think that's what mine had. It was a beast.
And like an 80 meg hard drive. Like,
yeah.
But I remember
King's Quest.
This was prior to the CD-ROM revolution, because like my 386 didn't have a CD-ROM, and it didn't have a sound card. And I had like this sketchy Disney sound source device that connected up to the parallel port so that I could get any audio out of it. You had a proper full-on computer though. You had a CD, I think.
Not to begin with. I think that was my first addition to it.
Oh wait, did you buy one? I vaguely remember you buying one at like Walmart or something like that and installing it.
Yeah. It was like my first attempt to like do anything with computers. I still don't. I think I convinced my parents, and I think it was Ms. Clark who convinced them that in order to get into college and to get good grades, computers were going to be needed. And so somehow my parents scrapped together enough money to basically buy a car and bought me a computer.
Yeah. Computers were expensive as hell at that point. And like, I remember my quote unquote good computer that I had in college. It came from basically an insurance settlement when I got rear-ended and got whiplash, and basically
that.
Like there was a pain and suffering settlement, and that went into a computer.
I remember that
because like they were stupidly expensive, like they're just ridiculously expensive to buy a computer at that point. Like I'm pretty sure, like so the last computer that I bought was at Costco, mostly because I had a really good deal on a pre-built from MSI with a 5080 in it. And it was $2,200 around Christmas time this last year. And I'm pretty sure I paid way more than that in like actual dollar amount back in the 90s for that Pentium 90. And it was like an error Pentium.
Mm-hmm. I know I'm sitting here in front of it. I was just thinking I've got a computer with three monitors, a Stream Deck. A digital Wacom, you know, pad, everything. And I probably altogether, this is only twice the cost of that crappy first computer I had.
Yeah. And I don't know. Was Chris our hookup for games? I remember someone we would send a box of floppies to college with.
Yep.
And it would come back with games on it.
Yeah, Chris had friends at NEO he would go visit in Stillwater, both. And he every time he went, he would say, hey, you want to send some discs?
Yeah, like we would all buy boxes of like verbatim discs or whatever and send them on.
Warcraft 2 came back bootleg copy on 30 floppy discs.
Yeah, that was ridiculous. Like I want to say, when I bought a legit copy of CorelDRAW from the TCC bookstore, it was on 90 floppies.
Mm-hmm. That's probably close to what, like, I loved OS2 Warp. That was, like, my favorite operating system. And it came in on a lot of floppies.
I want to say like, it was, like, 32-ish like, or so. Mm-hmm. Because, like, I bought it at, God, it's where Barnes & Noble on 71st is now. But there was a computer store next to it.
No, yeah, I don't remember like at all. I'm not allowed to hear Pulsar for the most part.
Software something or other. It was. I don't think it was Software Etc. Because that was the thing that became that was the store that was sometimes known as Babbage's and also all got ate by EB Games, which got ate by GameStop. Mm-hmm. But there was a software store there by Barnes & Noble on 71st, and that's where I got my copy of OS2 Warp. But like at that point, OS2 Warp was ridiculously cheap. It was like $35, something like that, which in 90s money is way more than $35 is now, but like that was still like I remember going to Best Buy and getting Windows 95 on release day. Like I was so freaking excited about going and getting Windows 95. Yeah.
I mean, it was a real operating system. It was cool. It was
crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's your Oh, okay. We haven't even like gone to the second question. Like I have known your character name of Kaelion. Kaelion Moonshae True Knight or True Knight Moonshae? I don't remember which
True
order.
True Knight Moonshae. Yeah, Kaelion True Knight Moonshae.
I know those words go together.
KTM. Yeah.
Okay, so where did the character come from?
Oh, so embarrassing. So, Kaelion is a bastardization of Elric of Melniboran, and the main character in, oh my God, Gabriel Knight.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. We were both together. Hooked on that game.
Yep. It was the two of those together with a little bit of, oh, I don't know, early understanding that I wasn't who I was supposed to be, that there was just some dysmorphia going on in general in my life.
Yeah.
And so Kalian became my pen name in high school, what I'd do all of my poetry under for the poetry anthology, where I was the editor-in-chief. And the only time I wrote poetry under my own name that I'd written under Kalian, I got called in the counselor's office, because this was pre-Columbine. If it had been post-Columbine, the cops probably would have been called.
Right.
And then it also became, of course, the long-standing RPG character that started in World of Darkness under you as my storyteller, and that has lasted in some iteration or form all the way up until a solo game I played about a year ago. Yeah.
Yeah, back then I had a character, Exeter Falstaff, that was my character.
We were so great at naming, weren't we?
Yeah, it's so bad, but also, like, you know, this is what the dementia, something true, dark, whatever.
Well, I mean, and come on, I mean, this was 90s World of Darkness. Everyone had names like that.
Yeah, yeah. And, well, the thing is I used Exeter up until the point that World of Warcraft came out, and the only reason why I switched over to Belghast is this became the character everybody knew me as, because it was my tank main and my raid main. Because otherwise, like, prior to that, like, you know, EverQuest and all those games, I played as Exeter still.
World of Warcraft was the only place that I've ever had to go by another name, because the same thing. My guild, everything else knew me as Torg, and so I had to use that name or people didn't recognize me.
Right, right. You are the person stuck in it. Yeah, you are the person that they know through raiding. Because, like, if you knew me in vanilla WoW, you knew me as Loden, my dwarf hunter, and between vanilla and Burning Crusade, I switched over to tanking, and then from that point on, everyone knew me as Belghast, and I got used to people calling me Bell, so I just name everything Bell something these days.
I know, speaking of WoW and names, you know, Torg developed from, what was it, Midnight Incorporated or something like that, which was our guild that we were trying, which in those days was really odd. We were a guild that would just help you out. Hmm. You know, if you had anything, you would, you know, send us, you know, a little bit of money, and we'd just help you do whatever quest you needed. We didn't raid. We didn't do anything else. We were there solely as, like, a services guild. And it lasted for quite a while. I think at the biggest point, I think I had, like, 100 people under me or something. And then I lost interest in WoW, like happens when you grow up and you're not in college and you're not doing, actually, this was, what, 2004, I think, for me. You have a job and you can't do it anymore, and you pass it off to someone else and they screw it up, but, you know.
Yeah, I'm actually back in, like, I've been playing WoW again lately, and, like, I've been on characters.
Seeming like it's really made some improvements, too, from what you've been talking about.
Yeah, it has. It has massively. But, like, I'm in the guild I started, but it's been led by someone else for so long that it's basically their guild at this point. And it's weird. Because, like, I'm just the odd uncle now. Like,
I was for a while, too, and I was like, I can't do this shit. I bounced. I was like, I can't be the old man in the corner.
Well, they're all old. Like, we're all, like, all the people in the guild are old. I'm just, like,
in world idea, where, oh, yeah, that's Torg. He started this whole thing, but he doesn't really do anything anymore. It's like I was relegated to, being the old man, like the war veteran in the corner who drinks beer and no one takes out anymore.
The gray beard.
Yeah.
That spins yarns about the good old days. Happened,
so I wasn't old at the time.
Yeah. We're both gray beards now, so.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's where the nickname came from. And all of the trouble that handle ended up giving me in real life and everything else started way back when.
Yeah, and we've talked about burying that name before. Because we were both IRC junkies and had varied experiences on IRC. And some of them good, some of them bad with that handle.
But all of them exciting, now that I think about it, you know. They weren't boring times.
No, they weren't boring times.
I was just thinking the other, I think it was like last night, thinking about this interview and stuff, and I was like, man, you know, like one of the biggest like memories I have of you in college was the fact that I lost my virginity and you're in Shelly's like house. And for years I felt, yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, yeah. To the monster that was my abuser.
Yeah.
We didn't realize it. Well, you guys, I think everyone else realized at the time, but I didn't yet. But the funny thing is, and this will tickle you, is I've been thinking for so long that I so wish I could have read cues and I would have lost my virginity to Shelly's roommate instead.
I didn't know that that was even a thing.
Well, okay, so we stopped, me and Chris, and at the time, I didn't feel that I was anything, no one would like me, I was, you know, worthless, blah, 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 all because of Mom. And I just figured that she was doing all of her performance for Chris, but let's be honest, it wouldn't have been for Chris. Chris was yeah. And she kept talking to me. Chris kept trying to get her to change the conversation. What was her name? Do you remember?
Vasty.
Vasty, yeah. I just remember she came out like with no bra in this really white t-shirt and like just her panties and sat down and was just there just talking to me and having this big conversation. And I look back and now I'm like, I mean, she probably was just teasing me, but I look back and go, man, it would have been so much better for my health and my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
If I had queued into that, because that would have been,
you were probably kind of like, me, where you were just totally oblivious to the designs of others.
Yeah, except I don't know if you felt, because of Mom, I always felt that I was ugly and worthless, and the only good I had was my brain and my art talent.
Yeah.
And because of school and some of the things that some of the kids did in middle school, I never believed that I was worth anything. Except those first 2 years of college, when my life was kind of reinvented. And all of a sudden, that first like semester, I look back and I like passed up like 4 or 5 chances to have a much healthier future than I ended up having. But that's what happens.
Yep. What is your earliest gaming memory?
Dragon Warrior, number one.
Okay.
I rented from one of the little rental places in Nowata. I think it was probably the one over by Lander's Grocery, where you could rent a Nintendo, and you could rent some games. And my dad, we never had the money to actually buy one, and it was just superfluous. My parents bought me an Atari 7800 instead. The idiots. Anyway, that's a whole other subject. Dragon Warrior 1, I remember renting it and it blowing my mind, and that's what led me down the whole RPG thing, is I ended up having to return it, so I had to make my own RPG out of like paper and cardboard. So I made like a Dragon Warrior game, and I was doing it at the library, and that's what brought me in touch with Brad, and what gave me all of my friendships that led from it was Dragon Warrior. The very first gaming memory I have is probably Star Trek. I just played it the other day. I found a emulator of it, and I can't remember what it's called. It's VGA Trek.
Yeah,
I can't remember
if I actually
played VGA Trek or it was one of the clones, but that's probably my earliest like real computer game memory. I mean, we don't talk about like Nintendo at friends' houses and stuff. Those are probably my earliest like real memories.
So had you and Brad done any pen and paper gaming prior to us running games together?
Yes. So when I was in eighth grade, I was in I was in algebra already, and that's where me and Brad really like met. We'd met over the summer at the library, but we really started hanging out then with a kid named Alan Brock. Do you remember him?
No.
Man, I would love to know what his sister, I know it was Julie Brock, but I can't remember anything else. But man, me and Brad had such a crush on her. Anyway, we actually started hanging out with Alan at his house out north Nowata and playing with the Marvel cards that had the stats on the back of them.
Okay, yeah.
And we played that we got into it. We did design work. I remember that was my first time, like, really tinkering with, like, real RPG rules and because it was all just.
So you were just sort of inventing a game.
We were. Yeah, yeah. I've always invented my RPGs all from the beginning. And then when we started hanging out, then we got into that huge, like, 10-person group that involved, like, our English, the English teacher, Ron, and, like, a whole bunch of others. And that was an interesting time, too.
That was World of Darkness, though, wasn't it?
No, that was actually...
or was that Rift?
I think Rifts was what we based it on. And that was the group that had... I still have the image, the portrait, the group portrait you drew of us. That has, like, the big, like, dragon person, because we just kind of picked miniatures that I had, and one of them was, like, a dragon, and Brad was the real Elric clone, even down to his name, and I was, I can't remember what my name was at the time, I don't think it was Kalian yet, but I was another Elric clone, I can't remember what everyone else was, you were, I can't remember who you were, but that was when we had, like,
it was probably some kind of cable clone.
Probably was. And it was outside. We played a lot on the ping pong table that we drug outside. There was a couple, like, Saturdays where we played that.
Was Jed in that, too?
I think he was for a short period of time. I think Jed and...
I remember, like, I don't remember the circumstances, but I remember... also going over to your house a few times.
No.
Because he broke Jed my skateboard.
Yeah.
At one point.
World of Darkness. He played in our World of Darkness game. Okay. He was the mage. Gentry was his name.
Yep. I remember.
Yep. I would love to get him back in a game.
I have no memory of Ron playing with us other than playing Magic the Gathering.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think. You may not have been actually in that game, but like one time, because it may have been...
It may have been after I had graduated.
It may have been, now that I think about it. It may have been just right after you kind of went on, and instead of playing World of Darkness, we went back to like Rifts and stuff. I think so, now that I think about it. Yeah, because I think...
Yeah, I have no memory of that game.
Was World of Darkness and Warhammer was all we ever did, I think.
Yep. I remember putting together the original Beaky Marines box set. That was great. I think we split it, didn't we?
We did, yep.
15 and 15?
Mm-hmm. And we only played a few times, but we just like threw books and stuff on that on a ping pong table.
Yeah, no, we made the sketchiest of terrain, but it worked. It blocked line of sight and, you know, it was good.
Mm-hmm. And you went on
the worst thing, though, was... when we decided to base the miniatures with the metal shavings that would end up cutting your hand anytime you touched them.
Yeah. They were brass shavings for my dad's cement
plant. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was like they looked really cool, but they also kind of like would cut you every time you touched
them. I mean, blood for the blood god, I guess.
I guess.
Man. So that's what I did last night while the tornado was coming, was I was painting miniatures.
Okay. What's that? Are you still working on your whatever the hell Eldar are called now?
No. I've got a whole bunch of printed up Imperial Guard that I just need to get done. And they were at that place where all artists know there is a spot when you're creating art that everything looks like shit. And you just can't see the end product and you're just depressed and you don't know what to do. And for miniatures, it's usually at the point where you get all of the base coating on, but nothing else. And then you're like, oh God, this looks awful. And I had a whole bunch of miniatures that were to that point, and I finally pushed through on the Imperial Guard. And then, so last night I painted up another like 12 of my 30 I have to paint.
So basically it was wash and highlight and they look good now.
No. I'm doing 3-color. So, and then they're to the point now, it was just all painting. Last night it was just all painting leather. That's all I did was painted brown leather parts. On like 14 miniatures, and it's like once you can just relax, it's not too bad. But then the storm was coming in, and I'm like, oh yay, now I can go out in the rain and stand. So
yeah, I mostly waited for it to pass and then went back to doing stuff. But you know, like I'm really thankful that the local news channel is stream stuff over YouTube, so I didn't have to have the Loft TV on. I could just have a YouTube window on the other monitor.
Yeah, I was watching their Facebook page. They were doing the same thing. And that's all I was doing. I was like, all right, I'm keeping an eye on it. When it gets close enough for me to worry, I may start worrying, or I won't. It's just me.
So you've kind of covered this already, but what are some of your favorite games and or genres?
God,
I mean, definitely role-playing games, but
yeah, I'm just, you know, anything. I mean, almost all kinds of games I like. I'm just addicted to story. I will say that I'm not a huge fan, although the dopamine hit is nice sometimes. I'm not like you, where I want games where I'm just constantly just getting loot. That's the reason I kind of bounce from Diablo. I'll go in and play it for a while, and then I'll bounce from it again. I'll bounce from things like, oh my lord, the first-person shooter, Destiny. You know, it's just like, I just want some kind of, like, real story to my games. Or at least, if it's not, I want it to be so boring that I can watch TV while I'm doing it. So idle games. I've been playing idle games here lately. Right now, I'm hopefully tonight, before I go to bed, I will beat Sands of Aura, just one of those games that passed under the radar, and it's pretty good. Otherwise, it's RPGs all the way, and especially tabletop when I can get them started and I can get a group that'll actually show up, you know, for games and stuff.
When you can convince us all to do the things,
yeah, you know,
like, hey, we have a semblance of a group. To get the ball rolling the other day.
Yeah, no. It would have been great. We were all ready to play. We just had a discussion last night about, well, the tornado's coming in. And I made the comment, I mean, this is a game that you guys don't actually necessarily need me for. So if I, like, just get blown away, you guys could still play because they're all safe. It's online, you know?
We would be terribly sad.
And I have, I have such glorious sights intended for you and your band now. That your poor band. I was talking to Sarah, and of course Sarah just her eyes just glass over. But I'm like, I've got this idea. Oh God, it's going to be awful. It's a horror game, so I can just let loose. And poor Mark,
I did it to myself. Like I you gave me two options, and I took the risky one.
You got to. That's one of the things about horror games. You know, you've got to do the stupid stuff in a horror game, or just no fun. You've got to go in the basement. You have to bring your most prized and treasured friend into it, knowing that they're probably going to die because it's a horror game and they're not the main character, you know. Yeah. You got to do those things.
For the audience at home, we have been playing this indie game called Public Access, which
will be in Kickstarter March the 17th for their first official physical product. I have to pitch that because I'm part of their Discord and they've been asking us to, and I agree. It's an amazing game.
Yep, it's really cool. It's basically like Stranger Things meets SCP meets Unfiction meets...
With a whole lot of Candle Cove. Candle Cove was also a big... Station Zero, if you remember that TV show. I think it was Station Zero. Had the monster with the teeth. It was all made of teeth.
I have no clue. Are you unfictioning me?
No. It is a real TV show. It was on, I think it was on Sci-Fi or something. It was really big for just a very short period of time. I think they had like two seasons, but it's amazing. You should really check it out. But Public Access has gotten accused of like copying it a couple times. But the author of the original Candle Cove mystery has been like, no, I love what they're doing. It's great. But if you know Candle Cove and stuff like that, it's very similar to that, yeah. Some adults going back and learning about their past and trying to uncover what happens at a TV station that no longer exists. And all the creepypasta unfiction that revolves around found footage horror. So.
Yeah, and it's interesting, like, it being set in, I think, what, 2004-ish?
2004, the first year that Google came about.
Yeah, so it's like the internet we remember... and fondly remember usually prior to social media. But yeah, it's been really interesting. We've got a good group to play with, and I think everybody's gelling pretty well. I did not expect to develop the whole buddy cop thing that I have.
Mm-hmm. You two run the game sometimes. So every once in a while I have to be like, all right, I've got to make sure I pull back from the two of you.
We're just on board. Like, let's go. Let's do the thing.
You are. It is great. And all of it has been so amazing so far. Your entire buddy cop washed out pro baseball player and washed out
metalhead
guitarist. You know, yeah. I would love to watch a movie with you guys.
It's very like for the audience at home, it's very Scooby-Doo mysteries kind of thing, but like with actual consequences.
Yeah.
First decision I made that was horrible was that I was going to sleep in the basement. And
yeah. Were you even thinking about how horrible that was going to be?
No, I was just thinking of my character. Like my character would probably be in the basement. Like,
yeah, not in a horror movie.
I made a character and I was following the decisions the character would make.
Okay. Yeah, but it's great.
So what would you change about the gaming community if you could?
Find a way to figure out who's a bot and who's real so that we can avoid all the arguments online that 90% of it is not real people. And when I say bots, I don't mean like just AI. I mean bad actors as well, pretending to be someone else, just there to stir the pot and make people angry. I think it's a different thing than trolls. I think trolls are just something you always have, and they're kind of loved in a way because they are who they are. But I'm talking about the people that have just they're not really there for, they're not fans, they don't care about it. They just want to stoke controversy and stoke anger and just divide people. And I think that's the way I feel about gaming, politics, everything. It's the only place that AI is getting to be a problem for me personally.
There was a stream that I was watching the other day, and I forget what the context was or even who it was, but there was this account that would like make super negative or just like stirring the pot type comments all the time. And then they went back and looked at the, like, and it's all the same person making whatever the counterpoint of what anyone else was talking about in the comment. And then that account got banned. And then a few minutes later, there was another sock puppet account doing the exact same thing. So it's like, it was clearly like the same person, probably just starting shit to start shit.
You know, when I teach classes about AI and at the library, I do about once a quarter, I try to help like older individuals, especially understand AI and how to help protect themselves from it online and things. One of the things I always bring up is that if you go and look at verified real people, the last Star Wars trilogy was okay. It wasn't amazing. It wasn't awful, but most people felt that it was okay. You would know that by reading the comment section of anything talking about Star Wars, because it was the worst thing that ever happened. And it was so awful. And yet you go in and look at verified accounts, and sure, there are people who didn't like it, but the hatred isn't there. And I think you find that in pretty much every single deep dive you do into social media and stuff. It's like whatever the issue is. Well, it's like the whole idea, if you're looking for what to buy on Amazon or anything else, you ignore the 1-star and you ignore the 5-star. And anything that's 2 to 3 stars or 2 to 4 stars, you read those things. And I just wish there was a way to kind of identify those in comment sections. It's like, oh, okay, this is one of those 1-star guys. I just need to ignore him.
Well, and I don't know, like this is something I've thought for a while, is like, it feels like we've forgotten how to enjoy mediocre things.
Well, see, it feels that way, but I don't think we have. I really don't, because I'm a huge consumer of movies. My total right now for 2026 is 107 movies. And I see comments, and if you ignore the people who just seem like they're just there to hate, people still ignore mediocre stuff. I mean, we know what it is. I mean, critics have always been critics, and it may not be cool to admit that you like that mediocre stuff, but I think we still like it. I just think that we have, because of silos and because of echo chambers and because of the inability to kind of tell who's just an idiot and who's not, we have this feeling that people aren't in the middle anymore. And I think every single scholarly study, you know, librarian in me coming out, as you know, you call me the librarian, almost all the scholarly studies I look at, they're all, people are still the same way. You know, people still are right in the middle. You know, it's just, but I know it does feel that way. It feels that way all the time. Every time I find something I enjoy, I go online and someone wants to tear it down.
Yeah, like, it's, I mean, like, I'll watch something. I'm like, yeah, that was fun. That wasn't the best thing in the world. It wasn't bad. It was fun. Like, it was worth watching. Like,
and then social media is like, oh no, it was awful.
I think outrage sells, and it continues to sell.
It does.
And I've listened to YouTubers talking about that, where, you know, if they cared about making the maximum amount of money from YouTube, they would always be on the rage bait. And that's because, like, people who are really mad at something want to commiserate with someone who's also mad at the thing.
Yeah. Speaking of, I saw my first 5-star movie 2 nights ago of the year.
What was it?
This is one of those times that people are going to yell at me. Predator Badlands.
Oh, I freaking loved it. It was great.
No suggestions. Everything about it was the worst complaint I had about the whole movie was the discussion they had on wolf psychology, which is so outdated. You know, we don't even use the term alpha anymore in talking about wolves and stuff. But of course, they had to go with that way. But that's the worst complaint I have about the entire movie. It was such a wonderful combination of, like, The Mandalorian and Predator, and the Predator of, like, the Dark Horse comics that we grew up with.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it was amazing.
I had to look it up because I don't remember what I gave it, but I think I maybe gave it a 4 or 4.5 stars.
I'm gentle with my stars. I've a weird rating system, so it makes sense.
Like, I'm contrarian. I hate that we live in this realm where if you did not give it 5 stars, you have adversely impacted it.
Oh, like, yeah, me too.
Like, it's a 5 stars or bust, like, economy that we live in. Like, because the thing is, like, if you don't give your delivery person 5 stars, they're going to be negatively impacted by that. Like,
yes.
And you feel it. And I hate that so much because it's so disingenuous.
No, the way I rate movies is I rate them on how well they accomplish what they were trying to do. It's not usually about how much I enjoyed them necessarily. It's like, that's the reason why you'll see a lot of 3 stars on my, like, Letterboxd and stuff like that. It's because, you know, hey, they did a fine job making the movie they were trying to make. It's a crappy movie, but they did a fine job. You get 4 stars if you did a really good job of catching the lightning in the bottle that you were trying to do with your budget, you know. And then 5 stars, extremely rare for me. 5 stars are those movies that I feel overshot what they were trying to do. That they created something that deserves extra recognition. And that's the only time I give really 5 stars. So some of my 5 stars are not necessarily amazing movies, but there's something about them that I'm like, man, they couldn't have made a better movie for what they were trying to do.
The only thing that I would have changed.
Yeah.
The only thing I would have changed about Predator Badlands is I feel like they were given the perfect opportunity to shift the perspective and make it so both people were speaking English when they started talking about universal translators. That way I didn't have to read the television for the rest of the movie.
Yeah, see, I'm just the opposite. You know, I loved the fact that the only reason that all of the synths were speaking English was because they were using universal translators, which meant the listener heard their native language.
Right.
Which meant the viewer as well.
I just think that, like, they could have fiddled with that a bit to make it to where we didn't have to speak what is it?
Yautja.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The entire movie.
I have subtitles on always anyway. And one of the things I thought that was so strong about Predator Prey was because they kept the subtitles. I'm a big fan of dubbing. I don't mind dubbing. And I get your point. I think that if you buy it on some streaming device, one of the audio languages should be like a dub of, like, purely in English. I agree. And I definitely see your point on that. But this was one that I actually sit on the couch and watched instead of trying to play a game while I was doing it. So I liked it. But
yeah, I so rarely am not doing 2 things at once. So
yeah,
I was absolutely, like, playing a game while I was watching it. But and that's the only reason why I would have cared. Because like I also watch dub anime for the same reason.
Most of my anime now is dubbed as well. Unfortunately, a lot of the shows that I'm liking so much, there's not a dub of them. And so I'm stuck. So
we've also bounced around this one. But what is something other than gaming that brings you joy?
So that's an interesting question when you really look at it deeper, because almost everything in my life involves gaming of some sort or another.
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of the way I look at my life. I'm just a character in a game. But I mean, I like to cook. When I have a stove that'll actually work. I like to spend time with my wife. I like being a librarian. I definitely don't do it for the money. So this will mark my 38th year as a librarian of some form or another. There's only been a 2-year period of my life after 10 years old that I haven't worked in a library, at least part-time.
I am so deeply worried that, and I don't know if you're experiencing this too, because we're both civil servants, basically. And
yeah, I'm a social worker. That's what libraries are anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're not getting as many applicants as we once did. And I don't know if you're experiencing that too, to where people don't seem to be going into it like they were, and it's harder and harder to replace vacancies.
Not really, because unfortunately libraries have gone the worst route they could. And most libraries, the library I work at is very different in this sense, but most libraries I know are they're saving money and doing away with professional positions. And there's always someone who wants to work in a library. Librarians and libraries consistently rank in the top three, right under firefighters and nurses, for being the most trusted and, you know, relied upon occupation, which is
libraries in general are such a safe space.
And, they are.
You know,
they're a safe space.
Especially for neurodivergent folks, it tends to be one of their first safe spaces.
Although not so much now with the new libraries. That's one of the things that I miss, is that they're not, now that they're a loud place and they're a community center, it's kind of losing some of the neurodivergent safe zone that it used to be for us who are neurodivergent and who grew up in those safe zones. But I also understand it. So no, we're not seeing it as much as a lot of the other civil servant positions are, luckily.
Okay, good.
We are seeing a drop in what I would call like traditional library jobs, because, well, no one needs traditional library jobs the way most people look at them, because a lot of people don't realize the amount of like information literacy and the lake analogy rather than the ocean analogy of knowledge. You know, the world pretty much respects ocean knowledge. You know, people are deeply specified and deeply specialized, and librarians are still one of those jack of all trades that they're expected to be like shallow experience in everything. And that's super helpful. I'm not so worried about.
The librarian has served the role as being kind of the guide towards other texts.
Yeah. And now Google is.
Yeah.
For better or worse.
But Google is now bricked because it's AI.
Yes. And this is one of those things that we can get into a much longer discussion about AI, because there's so much to talk about it, because like my corporate friends that are involved in AI are like not worried at all because they see how dumb it still is. My art friends are like paranoid beyond paranoid that they're just going to lose their jobs and they're never going to be a world for artists anymore, which I'm like, you do remember photography,
see,
right?
That worries me more, only because we've seen some very public AI slop commercials recently.
We have. And I'm an artist, you know, I paint, I still dabble with drawing and other forms of art now and then. I was a photographer, you know, I tried to have a photography business right as cameras became so cheap that everyone could afford them and there wasn't a place for me. And I will say that there's a reason for that, and it's going to be the same for artists. AI will never be able to replace art. What AI will do is the same thing that the camera did when Autobahn was around. is AI will replace representational and mediocre art. And that's really hard for some artists to hear, because I think art is still one of those places that we like to dream that if we're artists, we can make a living as an artist. And the matter of, and the fact is, most of us can't in general anyway, but it's a dream we have, and AI is killing that dream, just like the cheap camera killed the dream that anyone who takes pictures can make a living taking pictures.
Yeah.
I think that's what's going to happen. We're going to find that real artists, those people who create art and who create things that touch our souls, which is what art is for, they're going to continue working. Just like when the camera came out, there were still portrait artists, there were still landscape artists, and there's still going to be plenty of places that if you're an artist, you'll still do art because you do art because you love it, not because you're trying to make money on it. What it's going to kill is it's going to kill those artists that are right there on the edge, that are just good enough that they can get some jobs now and then, but they're not good enough to have like an individual vision that they can really sell. And maybe this is because they aren't sellers, they're just artists. They're going to be hurt, and that's a really tough pill to swallow, and it sucks, and I hate it. But photographers survived, artists can too. Sorry, that's a very dark statement, but
no.
And don't get me wrong, I feel awful. I have super sympathy, and I don't usually have sympathy. I try to have empathy in all things, but sympathy is something I dole out very sparingly. I have true sympathy for artists and AI right now. It sucks, especially voice actors. I think that's the place that is getting overlooked a lot. You know, voice actors are just flat losing their jobs because of AI, and it sucks, and it's awful.
And it's going to hurt the people that are up and coming people. Mm-hmm. More than the people that are established, because
yeah, it will.
You know, if you want a Steve Bloom or a Troy Baker in your game, mm-hmm. you're going after them for that person, you know, or an Erika Ishii, or you know, somebody that's an established voice. Yes,
they're
already
gonna have to still do the same thing that authors do, and indie authors and everything else. I mean, could you imagine your dad trying to run a photography business with cameras as they are now?
Oh, no. Like, and the reality is he ran that way longer than he actually wanted to run it. 'Cause he never enjoyed the business side of things.
Mm-hmm.
He was way more into, you know, doing it for the sake of art, but,
which thank God, because that's what led me to be able to have black and white senior pictures.
Yeah.
When that was like not something people did. You, me, and Jed, were we the three that did it?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. It sucks. But yeah. So that's what brings me joy. Everything brings me joy, or I try to make it bring me joy. It's not true. There's lots of things happening right now that I hate beyond hate. Some of the stuff you're going through being part of that, politics being another part of it. So things like right now, like we're talking, that's what brings me joy. There you go.
What is one of your biggest fears?
Biggest fears.
Now we're on the deep end of the questions.
Mm-hmm. That fundamentalist, idiotic, proselytizing Christians are right, and that heaven is the way they think it will be. That is probably my greatest fear.
That's deeply terrifying.
Because it guarantees that I'd rather be in hell. And if they're right about that, they're probably right about hell, and that'll be awful. But I would still rather burn for eternity than live in the dream that they have. That's probably the biggest fear I have.
Yeah. Since we've both been through deconstruction at this point, I agree with you.
Yeah. Deconstruction and what's it called? A deprogramming as well. Yeah.
Just to be said. Yep.
I mean, you were Catholic, which is a little bit better. Although Catholic and know what, I don't know exactly what that was like.
Only because it wasn't as big of a deal here. Like, if it were anywhere else that had a bigger presence for Catholicism, it probably would have been very similar.
Although I will say modern Catholicism is, oh God, this is so scary to say. It's like a lesser evil.
I mean, I do like the American Pope.
Yeah.
I,
yeah.
I, it does not make me want to go back into the faith, but you know what? You're not doing bad things in the world right now, so I count you as okay.
And you're actually speaking out, which is something we don't see a lot of. I mean, you know, Catholicism right now is in a weird spot. Yeah, it's strange. It's still not for me. Although it is probably the closest to pagan that there is in a Christian church. So, I mean, it's right there, I guess, close to where I'm at. But I do miss the cultural, social gel that organized religion gives you. I know the Bartlesville Pagan Association has really been trying to get me to come to more of their functions. And I need to, because I do need some of that, especially as I'm getting older.
See, I've never had that. Like, I even when I was younger, I was never bought in mentally. It was a thing that I was expected to do. And I was basically, I would crawl into my nothing box in my brain until it was over and then would go on about life. I am a bit jealous because, you know, my wife was faithful and, you know, she.
And you had some of that through her.
Yeah, but I'm just like an outsider in it because it's I don't know, like, I don't know how to explain it. Like, I've never felt part of it anywhere, even, you know, with, be it, you know, traditional Christianity or, you know, Catholicism as I was raised. It never clicked for me. I always felt like an outsider in that environment. But then again, like, I kind of feel like an outsider in almost every environment.
Yeah.
Which I know is ironic given that I build communities that end up growing bigger than me, but I always feel like an outsider inside of them.
Yeah. I mean, church for, Church of Christ in Nowata was awful. I mean, it was a cult, pure and simple. So I didn't really feel that way there. Really, the only place I have felt the kind of acceptance and camaraderie and warm fuzziness is really only two places. One of them was Gwen in Austin, which, if anyone out there knows of a Gwen chapter anywhere in Oklahoma, please, please get in touch with Belle and pass on the information. If you know what Gwen is, you know what I'm talking about. I guess I'll say what it was, because it was the BDSM kind of community in Austin. They were welcoming, they were kind, they were always gentle. They protected each other. It was a family, and it was something that I desperately miss. The closest I've come to it at all is walking into the pagan group's meetings at the library, and it just feels like there's this blanket of warmth that gets wrapped around you as soon as you walk in the room, and it's a scarily good feeling. And I understand how people who get that from church don't want to leave it.
On some level, I wish that existed for me, like, because I see the people for whom it does, like, it would be nice. It doesn't click. I think I'm fundamentally broken. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's weird. Like I said, a Gwen, you know, I mean, a BDSM group of all things, and I wasn't even really. I mean, okay, I was into DNS in college and still have my leanings there. Also, reason why I would love to find a group around here. But when I went to their parties and stuff, I wasn't doing anything. I was the one who sat over on the sidelines and just kind of talked to people and just was a goof. But they always made me feel welcome. And that's a good feeling. It's a feeling I haven't had in life. My parents really didn't make me feel that way. As much as I love you, and I have loved you dearly for a long time, I didn't really feel that way in, like, your group in high school. I didn't feel that way in college. I didn't feel that way in Austin, probably before I left the abusive relationship, probably because of the abusive relationship. It's just not something that I have felt very often, and I've only had it twice, and I would love to find it again wherever it is. And if that's, you know, So you probably just haven't found that weird fucking thing that you never. I didn't even go because I wanted to go. I went because someone told me they were going, and I had just gotten out of the relationship with Sky, and I was like, I'm not doing anything. Sure, I'll go with you. And so maybe, dude, you should just like go to some things that you don't think you'll enjoy, or maybe, you know, get out of the house. Says the person who's not left the house for the last like 4 days. But anyway,
yeah,
real talk, because I love you.
Yep, I know. It's just sometimes it's hard to get out of the threshold.
It is. And don't, my big, if I've learned anything in my life, it's that I have never found the things I'm looking for in the places where other people find them. So religion has never been the thing that I have found comfort in. It's always been something else. Friends, I've never found friends where other people seem to say you're supposed to find friends, you know, never been the place that I was supposed to look at it, but I don't know. Anyway, there you go. There's your deep answer.
So,
biggest fears.
Normally on this, side project, I'm bringing on somebody that's usually a content creator of some sort. And this would be the point at which they would plug something that they are working on or, you know, something.
ADHD brain would let me create content. I want to so badly, but
I know we plugged public access. Are there any other projects that you want to plug?
I necessarily want to plug, but I will say you have a wider audience than I have a friend base. So if anyone out there knows of an in-between game also done by the Gauntlet Studios, if you know of a good in-between game out there running online that would be amenable to a Dorian Gray character coming in and playing a campaign, please get in touch with me. I need one. And my gaming group can't handle the level of stuff that's in the in-between. So yeah, get in touch with me or get in touch with Belle. Other than that, no, I don't have anything to plug.
Okay.
Go to your local library. Support it. Vote every time you can to support your local library. There you go.
Well, this was a good conversation. It's not unusual that we have good conversations, but I appreciate your willingness to sit down and do this thing. This is a thing that I've really enjoyed recording. And want to get back in the swing of regularly recording them. It's always a challenge to like wrangle somebody though, but thank you so much for taking the time.
Easy questions though. You should have really given me a hardball. You've known me long enough. You should give me one last question. That's a really hardball question. Give me a real question. Not these that are, you know, what they are. Ask me something real, Mark. Oh, should have said your name.
That's fine. The reality is you can look up any of the domain names and get my actual name.
Yeah.
God, I don't know. Like now you're throwing me a hardball.
Yeah. You know, I have you ever we've known each other too long.
So have you ever thought about going back to our childhood, knowing what we know now and what kind of outcomes might have happened
all the damn
time as a result? Yeah. Like, cause like, I think I'd be a totally different person now. And like life would have unfolded in a totally different way. I do think about that sometimes. Like if you could like transplant your mental state now into your body back in high school.
Yeah.
The thing is like, I'm of two minds, right? Cause like on one hand, like, yeah, it would be interesting to change everything. But also by the same token, I don't know if I would want to, because I wouldn't be the person I am today if I hadn't experienced all the things that I had.
Yeah, that's a real question. I'm of two minds as well. I do get what you think, what you're saying about it's that whole idea. If you change who you are at any point in your life, you will no longer be the person you are in the present. I do think my life before college sucked hugely. I think I would, the only thing I can really think of that I would want to absolutely make sure that happened was I would have gone and seeked. I would not allow my mom to tell me that I could, that if I talked to someone, that they would end up taking me away from her. I would have talked to someone, and I would have hopefully found out before I was 40 years old that I wasn't worthless, I wasn't broken, and I wasn't a monster.
And like, I wish I could go back and make sure you understood that you really were welcome, that you weren't just, I don't know, like, you and I have talked before about how you felt like you were tolerated more than accepted. And I wish I could go back and make sure you understood that you weren't only tolerated, that I really did appreciate you.
So, sure. And I will say, I never felt that way when it was just me and you. When I was over at your house, man, it was the center of the world. Both of us were. I mean, it really all comes back to Jed. It's all Jed and Leo's fault. It was never your fault. It was just that if Leo was there, Leo was Leo, and Leo was always going to be the center of attention. And Leo, his humor could sometimes hurt. And Jed was just an asshole. Jed, if you're listening to this, I would love to get back in touch with you. One of my fondest memories in general is talking to you, like, you know, once you came back to Nowata and see the person you've become, I'd love to talk to you again, but you were an asshole in high school. Because really it was always when Jed was there that I started doubting whether or not I was actually your friend.
Yeah. And a lot of that abrasive nature that Jed had also came from his own.
Oh, it did.
Rough household.
Yeah, it was a defensive measure, and I don't blame him. I don't, because my life was shit too, so I don't blame it all. And he's still one of my fondest memories of high school. I mean,
like I didn't know the term at the time, but Jed and I were absolutely frenemies. Because
I think everybody was frenemies with Jed. I think that was just who Jed was.
There was like this whole competitive nature to it that I didn't want there to be. Like, I'm not a competitive person by default. Like, that's not where my brain goes. Like, it is never a zero-sum game. Like, it only really matters if we all get out on the other side.
Yeah, yeah, I'm competitive only in the sense that as long as it pushes us both to do better, I'm super competitive. And the only way I work well is if I'm competitive in that way. I want to be competitive, but I don't want to beat you. I don't care if you win. I just want both of us to do better than we could have if we weren't competitive. Yeah.
But yeah, there was always like a weird one-upsmanship thing going on that I was being held hostage into doing because it was a thing that he wanted to do. So
here's a question for you then. Do you think that was all because of, oh God, how do I put this? The unhealthy skater community we had in Nowata? There are some really healthy skater communities, and I love skateboarders. But looking back, and Nowata, man, Trey was a mess. Michael was a mess. Jed was a mess.
I think the Jed thing was because we were both in the Gifted and Talented program, and we were both in all of the same classes. And generally speaking, I got better grades and got more accolades than he did.
Okay.
And I think it was a jealousy thing. And I did not care. But you can't be winning and claim not to care in the eyes of somebody who doesn't want you to win. So
true, yeah. And knowing his life and how tough it was, and that was the one place that he could have, that was his. And it's always tough to have someone that's just better than you and who may... In a lot of ways, the fact that that person doesn't care is the shittiest
part of it. Probably is what made it worse, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's the shittiest part of it. It's like, I remember, you know, just feeling that, I mean, it's fine if you're better than me, but at least care. The fact that, that's a really good example. Oh my God, Lance, I think was his name? He was in Brad's year. Lance Davis,
yeah,
maybe?
Yeah.
He got national merit that year. He got like a scholarship from his dad's work, which I think was AT&T or Southwestern Bell. He ended up going to college with like $400,000 worth of like scholarship money and flunked out the first semester because he just didn't care. That infuriates me, you know? So yeah, maybe that.
I mean, I'll be honest. Like, I didn't learn how to study until I got to college because I never had to in high school.
I didn't have to in college. Which is a really bad thing because I didn't learn how to study until really job stuff. Because grad school, I didn't study for it either. I think I opened my book in grad school like twice. I've never been a master of anything, but man, I can pass anything. I can learn anything to a passing grade without ever putting any effort into it. And that sounds amazing. And, you know, people will say, oh, you're so lucky, but it sucks because the first hurdle I find, I don't jump. I go somewhere else. But yeah, good question. You should add that into there because that's a really good question.
Okay.
That could be the optional one. If they don't want to talk about their biggest fear, they can talk about what would they do. What would they do over?
Yeah. Well, all right. I have no idea how long we've been recording at this point, but we have reached the end of the questions.
Yep.
Thank you so much for sitting down and doing this. I've been wanting to forever.
Ever since I saw you'd done this one, when I started reading your blog and I saw the first like Bell Folk stuff, I'm like, my God, someday I want him to ask me to do one. So thank you. I've been looking forward to this for years now, actually.
That's shocking.
I know.
Like this, the funny thing about this is like, you know, so when I write my blog, the secret is I am talking to myself and I am just hitting publish and I forget what the heck I said. And it always weirds me out when people have actually paid attention. It's like, wait, you were watching? What? Yeah, it's a weird mental trick that gets an introvert like me to be able to do stuff like this. But anyway.
Yeah, I wish I had the ability because, like I said, I've always wanted to do something, you know. I've always said that when Mom died, I would write a memoir because there's so much I want to say. If nothing else, I want to tell kids in a similar situation that I was in where it wasn't, I mean, there was physical abuse, but it wasn't physical abuse. It was emotional. It was gaslighting. And it was a lot of awful things. And I knew I could not write it before Mom died at all because it would have broken her heart. Because I don't think she understood how abusive she was. I don't think it was an intentional thing. But at one point I thought, well, I'll just do it online as a blog and then I'll hit publish someday and it'll be there. And I can't do journals. I can't do anything it's the ADHD brain now. I thought I was broken. I thought I was a piece of shit and worthless. And now I understand, no, it's my brain chemistry and it's how my brain works. And there's something else I have to do. In fact, I have to go today and get my ADHD medicine because I've been off for a month and my life has fallen apart, which is amazing to realize how much of an impact it really had. So, if you're listening to this and you're like over 30, get tested for ADHD.
I need to go through it. I'll be honest. I need to go through it because like I have so many traits.
Dude, your primary care doctor can put you on, they can do the first diagnosis and get you on meds. My doctor did the questionnaire for me and she didn't even ask me the questions. I brought it up to her that I thought that maybe I should go check. And she's like, so do you want some meds? And I'm like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, there's a checklist that we have and you have just talking to me over the last few years marked every single box on this checklist. So I'm more than happy to get you some meds and get you started on some medication. Now, if I want to go further and I want to fine tune it, I need to actually go and to a real psychiatrist, but those are expensive and insurance doesn't cover that stuff. But very basic stuff has helped me so much.
I'm on tirzepatide right now, which is a GLP-1 agonist. And the thought there is to make the eventual surgery easier at some point. It would be beneficial to lose weight. Now, there are a bunch of undocumented side effects of that. And I don't know if I told you this or not.
I saw, but, I think on your blog, talking about how it's done away with some of your stuff.
It silenced like the negative voices in my head and also my constant running track of digging into every decision that I have made and criticizing it's awesome, it just silenced it. And it's so weird to have a quiet brain.
I know.
The problem is it is way easier for me to flip into a flow state and completely ignore other things.
Yes, I have found that. The main thing that's done for me is I've never been able to do deadlines. Well, I shouldn't say deadlines, like appointments. I've never been able to do those things, the little check boxes of life that everyone else is able to get done. They've never worked for me. I've never gotten any dopamine hits from them. I forget them. I forget things as soon as, you know, my brain does, because I have executive dysfunction issues. And so my brain doesn't know which piece of stimuli is the most important to listen to and to remember. So it tends to get it wrong. And so I just forget things. I have object blindness, a bunch of other stuff. And so I've always thought I was just broken and I couldn't do anything. And what the meds have basically done to me is it's let me recognize when I'm forgetting things and reminding me to check if I've forgotten something.
Yeah, I've always had to turn things into rituals.
Uh-huh.
And so long, but the problem is, it's like my ritual is step A and B and C and D and E and F. If one of those steps gets missed, I am lost. I don't know where I am anymore.
Yep. Yep. It's like, I have an exercise bike in there. I like to use it. It's great. I don't not want to do it, but if I'm not looking at it, it doesn't exist in my world. And so the only time I typically see it, especially without my meds, is when I walk into to get something from the kitchen or something else. I'm always doing something else and I see it and I'm like, oh man, that's right. I need to get on the bike tonight.
Right. Once I get out of the habit of doing something in a ritualistic manner, it stops existing at all.
Yep. And I thought I was broken. And now I'm realizing I'm not broken. My brain just works differently. It is not one of those things where all these fixes that everyone says to do, oh, just keep a to-do list. To-do lists don't work for brains like me because I'll forget about the to-do list.
Well, my calendar works only because I have ritualized following a calendar, and putting things on the calendar means they'll happen, but it's because I have now this, I've built this deep ritual of checking my calendar constantly.
Yeah. See, for me,
if I ever stop, like if I'm off work for a large period of time, it is hell for me to get back in the habit of being calendar driven again.
Yeah. The only way I can do things is if I tie them to an emotional responsibility to a person, which is really weird. So, you know, my boss would talk about how, man, every time I email you or anything, you get it done right away. But other people are like, you don't like finish your things. I'm like, yeah, because when you email me, it ties that activity to me doing something for you. And if I can tie an activity into I'm doing this for someone, my brain remembers it. That's the reason why, you know, I try to get like my wife to exercise with me for the longest time or do things like that. Because if I'm doing it for someone, I remember. But if I can't tie it to like an emotional need in my brain, it doesn't happen, which is really strange. Talk about needy.
Yeah, I am a better caretaker than I am a doing things for myself person.
Mm-hmm.
Cause there's a
you
lot
your
of
house
shit
cleaned. I will happily clean your house.
Well, there's a lot of shit that like, just for me, is it really worth it?
Yeah. Yeah. But I know it'd make so-and-so's life better if I did it for them. So I'll go do it for them. And then I come home and I'm like, wait a sec, look at my place. My place looks like shit in my office. And then maybe I'll clean it, which is great. I love a clean office and it always makes me feel better, but it's not, you know, what it probably comes back to, what do I matter?
It's not the highest priority. Yeah,
that's a whole other issue. Anyway, this has probably run long enough, but thank you for adding the extra question because I was hoping you'd give me a good one. All right.
Okay. Well, thanks everybody for tuning in. I will edit this up and podcastify
it. Cut out half of it.
Nah, mostly I just, so the problem is I tend to truncate silence. And so it ends up seeming like I'm just super pushy because I've gotten rid of all the silence. Anyway.
That's the way it works. Yep.
Yeah. See y'all later. Bye.
Bye, guys.